Hi and welcome to Revision Media with me, Paul Stevenson, here live from London, England on this Wednesday, the 3rd of February 2021. I'll be with you for the next hour. That is through till, 4 p.m., I believe. Through till 3 p.m. Central Time, through till 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and here over in London through till 9 p.m. Hope wherever you are, I find you well. So January's gone, thank God. These are difficult times in so many different ways, very precarious times, very uncertain times, and very oppressive, claustrophobic times with these draconian laws everywhere and masks everywhere. And who knows where this is going to end? I mean, certainly it's not going to end well, even just looking at the economy. We saw, of course, we had what's been described as the financial David and Goliath situation, where you've had these Reddit Wall Street Bets guys short squeezing GameStop and AMC and some of these other shares. And there has been, last week they posted about short squeezing silver, which is a much bigger task, let's say, because they're much bigger markets. However, there was frantic action over the weekend into silver ETFs, and also there's been huge demand for silver bullion to the point where the big silver dealers weren't able to supply it. I was listening to Peter Schiff as well. I mean, he sells bullion, silver, and gold, and he said, you know, he's never seen such a busy time for silver bullion orders, and the majority of them were new orders. Because he said most of the time, and I imagine this is probably the case among most silver bullion and gold bullion dealers, the majority of the orders would come from, you know, already existing customers and repeat orders, people adding to their position and allocation. But they said that a lot of the bullion dealers have been saying the same thing. It's been a lot of new business and smaller orders. And I imagine what they would call smaller orders would be, you know, with guys spending anything from about $2,000 or even $1,000 sort of on average, between 1,000 and maybe 20,000, because a lot of these guys who, you know, are wealthy and buying silver, they usually buy these, like, you know, 500-ounce boxes and stuff, and maybe buy five of them at a time or whatever. So what you're seeing is smaller retail investors getting into silver. And of course, this is good, because silver would be very, very damaging to, and of course, this is why they were attempting to short squeeze it, would be very damaging potentially to hedge funds and the whole banking economic system. And it does get quite complicated. And also, it's been difficult to gauge, because on Monday, the price of silver did spike reasonably high, but it wasn't anything remotely like GameStop. It went up from about $25, and it reached 30, 31 at one point, which is a significant rise. But you know, it's not GameStop territory. And plus the fact the next day it actually lost the majority of the gains. And that was the same with the mining stocks as well. First Majestic Silver, which was the prominent one that was mentioned on the Wall Street Bets Reddit forums. And silver is currently sitting at, about $26, I think. Sorry, $26.78. So it's maintained a little bit of those gains, but, you know, I look at it in pounds, and from pounds' point of view, before the big the rise on Monday and all this hysteria, it was 19.24. 19 pounds 20, or sorry, it's 19 pounds. Let me just check. Was it 74? Or was it 1874? Yeah, Sunday evening, before all this kicked off and before the bigger rise, it was 1974. 19.74. And now it's actually sitting at 1964. So it's actually lower now than it was on Sunday. Now, because of the dollar must be a bit weaker since then. The exchange rate puts that to $26.78. So it's up in terms of dollars because it was $27.05 at the time. And now it's $26.78. So the point is it's lost pretty much all of the gains it made. However, it seems, and this will probably impact the price of silver going forward, it seems that if nothing else, these Reddit guys and these Wall Street forums have triggered interest in silver, because it cannot be denied that these bullion dealers have been announcing to the press and the financial press and everything else that they've seen unprecedented demand for bullion, silver bullion. So you're having more people coming into it, which is good, because as I say, people buying a lot of silver is a threat to the global financial system in terms of the controllers of that system, the JP Morgans, of course. Because these guys get into all sorts of manipulation and everything else. And if there are calls, because you get the call options, you know, the paper, the ETFs, the way that works is that these guys, you can buy a contract. You can do this with any of the ETFs and like oil and any of these commodities, where you can buy a contract in silver, but these guys are never expecting to actually deliver on the silver. And what would happen is, because these are big contracts, I think these contracts are like, you know, for the equivalent of maybe 100,000 ounces of silver or something, but you know, these ETFs, the way they work is you only have to pay 3% up front. And then if you want the delivery, you have to pay the equivalent. Now, if enough people start asking for delivery on the silver, that these hedge funds and these guys who, you know, are involved in this, they won't be able to deliver the silver because the silver's not there. So it's a scam because they're selling ounces of silver that they haven't got. And if enough people call on those options for delivery, then these guys are going to have to go to the market to buy it because they haven't got it. And they're large amounts. And then the market's going to have to try and produce them in a market which has a scarcity of silver, which means that they'll have to pay huge premiums to get it. So if they're on the hook for these massive amounts of silver because of these contracts, people calling on them that they never expected to call them, they're going to have to go to the market and might end up paying like, you know, 5 times, 6 times, maybe 10 times the spot price of silver just so they can get the silver. Because the silver is scarce. And it does get very complicated, and it actually goes beyond my knowledge base. And I'm not alone, because I've been listening to people trying to, you know, people who are more knowledgeable than I am about such things, especially when you get into the minutiae of the detail of it. There's a lot of people confused, you know, this whole Robin Hood situation and what happened there as to, you know, these clearing houses and all that sort of stuff. I mean, it really does get quite complicated. You would probably need to do some proper formal studying and how these things work. But it is difficult to tell because, you know, because the price of silver, as I say, they lost the majority of those gains in the space of 24 hours, including the mining stocks, like First Majestic, particularly it was mentioned on the Reddit Wall Street Bets forums. They lost them too. I know they lost them because I wish I had sold them when they went up on Monday, because they came down and I actually lost a little bit of money. I sold half of what I had and left the rest in there, and I cashed out today at a small loss. Like, I mean, nothing major, but, and overall I was still up a little bit because I sold the four that I did sell when they were at their peak. So it's difficult to know, because on one hand you've got this, like, you know, you would think, shouldn't this be reflected in the price? If you've got all these people coming into silver and there's unprecedented demand, and there's going to be, you know, and a lot of it's new investors, new retail guys with smaller numbers, that means that the masses are responding to this Reddit situation. And that is a good thing, because you would think that down the line that's going to have an effect, because it's increasing awareness of silver, because a lot of these people who are buying, you would think that they're going to be talking to other people, and they'll talk to other people, and more people are going to come in to buy silver, which eventually put the price up. But it hasn't really happened yet. The other interesting news is that GameStop spectacularly capitulated and collapsed. It was down, you know, it went from, it opened up on Monday at $328. By the end of Tuesday, it was down, it was less than $100. So I think I was, I mean, you know, ostensibly, the fact that Robinhood are still limiting people being able to buy the stock would have an effect on it. But, you know, Robinhood's just one trading app, so there's a lot more going on than that. So I think there's probably a lot of guys in that, you know, Wall Street bets forum who are maybe disingenuous. They're pump and dumper guys in there, probably preying on the little guy's ideological zeal to get his own back and act revenge on the hedge funds. And because if you go on those forums, all you see is, you know, hold, hold, don't sell, hold, don't sell. Well, someone's selling and someone's made a lot of money, because from $328 to $90, someone's dumping. And it probably is the same guys who are pumping it. Because if you pump it up, then you can make the money by selling it. But you need it to go up first. And I feel sorry. There's a lot of people lost money there. You know, it went up as high as $480. And if you happen to be one of the guys who got in there at $300 plus, you lost a lot. And it's kind of stabilized today. It seems to have met some resistance. It did have a small gain today, but that thing's on its way down, I think, to zero probably. Yeah, it went up today by $13. And as we speak, it's lost 9 of those. So it's plus $4. It's sitting at $95. I'm amazed it's even at that level, to be honest. So yeah, big losses there. And we shall see. But eventually I think the real flood into silver and gold will happen, and it's probably not going to happen yet, but it's a good start. As I say, you know, you can't deny the fact and take away the fact that all these people, and a lot of them are new guys, you know, piling in to buying bullion. So that only bodes well, I think, for the future. So I think silver is only going to go up. You might see some small pullbacks, but I think it's going to just, you know, help to consolidate, if nothing else, the price that it's currently at, and provide some real resistance below sort of probably around $25. I can't see silver falling much below $25 again. So yeah, if it pricks people's interest, all the better. But you know, it's a big market, so you know, the likes of Wall Street bets and that aren't going to be able to short squeeze that the way they did just one stock and GameStop and things like that. Anyway, in an article, you don't hear many people talking about this in mainstream media. In an article in UK Column, I would advise anybody to listen to UK Column over here. You can just UK Column News on YouTube. Why is there a correlation between the vaccine rollout and increased COVID-19 mortality? And the cases that I have seen where there has been any questions put to medical experts and things like that, they say, oh, no, it's just like, okay, well, these guys died, you know, shortly after they took the vaccine. But they died with the vaccine. This is the great irony, isn't it? Now they're using, they've flipped it when it suits them. They're saying, oh, no, they died with the vaccine, but not of the vaccine. But when we say, oh, yeah, but they died with COVID, not of COVID, you know, either silence or ridicule, you know, of being a conspiracy theorist. But now whenever you've seen some people dying with, you know, shortly after having the vaccine, people that were reasonably healthy, it's like, oh, no, they had pre-existing conditions, and that's what killed them, not the vaccine. Well, why not apply the same logic then, and why do you call us dangerous conspiracy theorists and disinformation artists when we suggest that people with pre-existing conditions and who die with coronavirus, not of coronavirus? So, you know, they just change it and when it suits them. The article says, a number of unusual death events have been reported in care homes across the country, meaning the UK, since the beginning of the vaccine rollout. Officially, any connection to the vaccines has been denied, and they have all been taken as evidence of the spread of the new variant of COVID-19. So there you go. The rollout of this vaccine, there's a spike in deaths in the care homes, for example, and other places. And they say, oh, no, it's not the vaccine. You know, and they just use that. They use the deaths to say it's a new variant. You can't win. Because this is all so, this whole virus thing is so nebulous in the end. People, we have to just accept their word for it with everything. Do we know? Will we ever know? You know, how many people died with it, of it? How many tests were positive, false positive? We'll never know. And this is, they love this. Because they can build a narrative around whatever they want. Just a case in point. This, oh, no. These people didn't die of the vaccine. They died of the new variant. Well, how do we know? I mean, it's just like, you know, the viruses, variants. I mean, we just have to take these people word for it. You know, how do they even, you know, it's so easy to say, oh, we've got a new variant. How do they know? I mean, I'm sure that maybe there is a way with honest people of identifying it, but the point is it's so easy to manipulate and to deceive with this stuff, new variant. You know, this is how bad it is. It made the news over here, Sky News, you know, new breaking news. Two people in Surrey, which is a county over here where I do, it's a neighboring county. I do most of my gardening work in Surrey. It's a big county in southern England, southwest England. And, oh, we've got two new cases of the South African variant. I mean, it's probably my ignorance here, but I know these people know it. I'll give them a job. Oh, South African variant, that one. Oh, that's the, you know, Brazilian variant. I mean, it could be just complete bullshit, really, couldn't it, at the end of the day? I mean, go into your lab. There might not be any variants. It could be, you know, it's at the point, as I say, it's so easy to manipulate all of it. Anyway, the new coronavirus variant tail. Yeah, I'm glad they put that word tail, but this is UK column, so these guys are clued up. Commonly offered by the mainstream media, asserts that SARS-CoV-2 consistently evolves into an ever more dangerous iteration of itself. Isn't that handy? Isn't that handy for a government who are obsessed and addicted to lording it over you and controlling you and dictating to you and committing tyranny in your life and every area of your life? Isn't it just wonderful that this virus consistently evolves into an ever more dangerous iteration of itself? Well, we got rid of the first coronavirus and the vaccine worked for that, but, you know, all they need to do to keep this lockdown going is have a new variant where they come out, you know, their grim faces and, you know, Boris Johnson acting all serious, which doesn't suit him because it doesn't suit clowns to act serious because they're not serious people. And that little psycho weirdo Matt Hancock to come out with a serious face. And you just have to take their word for it. You know, well, we have a new variant now. Good God knows where the next variant's coming from. And this one, this new variant, we don't think the vaccine's going to be able to deal with this. So we've got another problem. And this new variant is not only more deadly, but it's more viral. It spreads more. So we'll have to keep the lockdown going. I mean, they're absolutely capable of this. So the SARS-CoV-2 consistently evolves into an ever more dangerous iteration of itself. This is what we're told. If that were true, it would turn decades of virology, immunology, and epidemiology on its head. And in any case, as we shall see, any such claim is unsupported by the statistics. And the worrying thing is, and the depressing, frustrating thing is that it doesn't matter, you see. It doesn't matter how many Ivor Cummins there are, how many ex-Pfizer guys like Card Hennigan there are. It doesn't matter how many respected epidemiologists and virologists question this stuff or outright prove it to be nonsense and deception. It doesn't matter. That's the frustrating thing. They don't care. They've got their own narrative. And as I said before, you know there's an agenda, because if they really cared about dealing with COVID-19, they would be listening to these other people who are very well respected and have tremendous careers in these fields, and they would listen to them, and we would have a proper cost-benefit analysis to bringing into the everything into the equation, the economy, mental health, children's education, everything. But you know there's an agenda when they don't want to listen to any other views. And they don't listen to any other views. So it gets to the point where you realize that it doesn't matter. It's kind of pointless almost in some level, trying to talk to the establishment anyway, or trying to push out these challenges to their nonsense and propaganda. Because, you know, not only will they suppress it, but they will disgracefully try and smear and stigmatize respected people. So you know there's an agenda going on. The so-called British variant was first discovered in September 2020. We can look at our four distinct periods to see if we can observe its effect. Let's look at the period from the start of the alleged global pandemic to the end of the first hard lockdown. Until the 10th of May 2020, the UK tested 1,655,000 people. From this, they identified 210,500 so-called cases, which is a positive test result. This resulted in 98,799 COVID-19 hospital admissions. There were 32,960 claimed COVID-19 deaths during the same period. And it must be noted as well, of course, these hospital admissions, they were recording hospital admissions for COVID-19 for people who had already been in hospital and within 9 days of admission caught the coronavirus in hospital. I mean, it's so obvious, and these questions should be asked, and this thing should have been scrapped, and this whole thing should have been dead and buried for the corruption that it is months ago if you didn't have a media run by the same clique that are pushing this. And they are completely complicit in this, and there's huge collusion between the media, the governments, and large globalist special interests and oligarchs. Many of them Jewish, like the media and like our parliament. Many of them are embedded in there. Many of the parliament are people with Jewish descent who came here in the early 20th century and bought and bribed their way into the elites in this country. Went through Oxford, Cambridge universities, ended up as politicians. They're embedded in there. They have their own interests. They're Jews. They are hostile to Western culture. They are hostile to the nation state. They are hostile to anything wholesome. They are hostile to Christianity. They are pro-homosexuality. They are pro-artificial low interest and Keynesian satanic economics. They are pro-massive big lending sprees by central banks that their little satanic clique brothers and sisters run and own. And then those who aren't part of that, they get bribed. And plenty of them are happy to take their money. And that is the fifth column in the country. And it's just all one big fifth column in our country and right across the Western nations countries. Anyway, so these facts, are these massive gaping hole elephant in the room statistics never get discussed and aired on mainstream media. Anyway, therefore, the percentage chance of a test discovering an alleged, quote, case of COVID-19 was 12.7%, The claimed chance of one of these cases leading to hospitalization was 46.9%, and the confirmed case risk of dying, case fatality rate, was a staggering and frankly unbelievable 15.6%. Next, we can consider the period from the 11th of May 2020 to the 30th of September 2020. During the summer months, you would expect the raw numbers for any respiratory illness to be much lower. This period takes us up to the point where the new variants of concern were well established. There were 20,738,550 tests given, resulting in 235,334 cases and 43,926 hospitalizations. A total of 9,046 people died during this period. The percentage chance of a test finding a case was 1.1%, with an 18.7% chance of subsequent hospitalization. The CFR had dropped to 3.8%. Now let's look at the period of the new variant activity up to the start of the vaccine rollout. As we were heading towards winter here, we might expect a general increase in disease contagion and severity. Between the 1st of October and the 9th of December 2020, there were 21,218,000 tests carried out, finding 1,315,529 cases. Of these, 92,999 people were hospitalized and 21,674 died. The case discovery rate was 6.2%, the hospitalization rate was 7.1%, and the CFR was 1.6%. The chances of a positive test had increased, suggesting a more contagious COVID-19 variant than seen during the summer. However, the new variants of SARS-CoV-2 were nearly seven times less transmissible than observed during the initial spring breakout. The chance of a hospitalization was lower, and they were also less than half as deadly as the summer variants and nearly 10 times less lethal than the spring variants. The data shows that the new variants discovered in the autumn of 2020 were both less contagious and less lethal than the variants encountered in the initial spring breakout. They were notably more contagious than the variants that persisted during the summer, but were far less dangerous. Finally, let's look at the recent period since the rollout of the vaccine. And this is why I was reading the story. From the 10th of December 2020 to the 31st of January 2021, there were 25,982,406 tests, which discovered 1,995,048 cases. This led to 154,019 hospitalizations and 42,000 so-called COVID-19 deaths. The case rate rose from 6.2% to 7.6%, continuing the trend of increasing transmission with the new prevalent variants, though it remained much lower than during the spring. Yet, strangely, hospitalization rose to 7.7% and the CFR jumped from 1.6 to 2.1%, which obviously makes absolutely no sense. These figures are very difficult to reconcile from a new variant perspective. During October, November, and early December, the new variants had accounted for an increased rate of transmission, but significantly lower rates of hospitalization and mortality. The disease risk trend continued to decline, even in comparison to former summer variants. During the vaccine rollout, despite continued falling mortality rates in early December, the new COVID-19 variant suddenly changed behavior. And this is what I mean. You know, these things can just suddenly change behavior. You know, it's all sort of, oh, you're not an expert in that. Are you an epidemiologist? Well, who are you to comment then? You know, this is the perfect kind of situation for them to manipulate everything, you know. Hospitalization rates increased by more than 8% and the mortality risk shot up by over 31%. Harsher winter conditions are expected to account for more numbers of hospitalizations and deaths, but not to fundamentally change the characteristics of the resultant disease. Some other factor must have been at work during the vaccine rollout. And also, as I said before, it's been observed that there is tremendous symmetry between these large increasing in deaths and hospitalizations from COVID-19 and an unprecedentedly low levels of flu, particularly flu, but also Alzheimer's and that type of stuff. You know, I mean, literally flu's just disappeared, and some of these other deaths are way, way down as well. But as this story goes on, there might be another explanation for, you know, even if we accept, you know, that these deaths have gone up, let's, you know, considering that the virus has not been any more lethal, let's look at an alternative explanation, which would seem to make sense. Viruses are effectively parasites. There is no evolutionary advantage for them to kill their hosts. Consequently, virus variants lead to new predominant strains which infect more hosts while killing fewer of them. More lethal variants tend to lose out to less lethal ones. You know, isn't it interesting when you think about it? You know, when you think about what we're dealing with, you know, it is like a virus in terms of that little group of people that I mentioned earlier. You know, they tend to kill their hosts, don't they? But yet they're parasites. They need to suck off their hosts. That particular group of people is so parasitic and so aggressive that it always destroys its host. Even viruses, it seems, have more sense and more restraint and more wisdom than to keep sucking and killing. But not that clique. They just keep going until they and then what they do is whenever they finally sucked it dry, then they move on to another per victim host. But virus variants lead to new predominant strains, which affect more hosts while killing fewer of them, because viruses want to survive, so they evolve not to kill their hosts. More lethal variants tend to lose out to less lethal ones. This is why some form of coronavirus accounts for approximately 30% of common colds. Up until the vaccine rollout, the reduction in lethality is clearly identifiable in the statistics. So where has all the fear and alarm come from about the British, Brazilian, South African, Kent, and who knows how many other variants? Once again, the UK government were reliant upon their preferred experts, and I will add, who no one voted for, and it's up to the government and Boris Johnson to make decisions. It should not be dependent on a bunch of morons who we never heard of until this virus came out and who no one voted for. This passing of the buck to the experts is exactly the type of scapegoat that Tony Blair used to justify and to wriggle out of responsibility for taking us into a legal war in Iraq where there was no threat. Well, I was only going by the advice of MI5. Well, it's up to you as Prime Minister to make the final decision and to govern the country in the way that you were voted in to do for democratically. And I think a million people marching through the streets of Iraq would probably give you, or through the streets of London protesting going to war, involved in that war, would probably give you a good indication that you shouldn't go there. But of course, Tony, like Boris Johnson and all the rest of them, they don't actually represent the people. They get voted into government, with promises of BS, and then they get in there and do what they really want to do and do the agenda of their handlers and their bosses and who they really work for. But this idea that, oh well, you know, we're the sage said this and say we are our decisions we're you know, we're going with the science. First of all, science is ambiguous, and if this year has proven anything, these guys have completely destroyed the credibility of real science with this propaganda. But we didn't vote for Sir Patrick Vallance or any of these other clowns in the ironically named Sage. So Boris Johnson said, oh, I'm only going with, you know, this idea that, you know, you hear it in the papers over here, in the so-called right-wing newspapers over here, you know, Boris Johnson is doing everything he can to get the schools open. What do you mean doing everything he can? He's the Prime Minister. The buck stops with him. If he says the schools are opening, the schools are opening. Enough of this nonsense. Otherwise, let these subcommittees and these groups run in the next election. Let Sir Patrick Vallance run in the next election, and we'll vote for him and Sage rather than politicians. I mean, it's just, whatever. Once again, the UK government relying upon their preferred experts and preferred and only so-called experts to listen to, as I said before. If you need any proof that there's an agenda, it's that they will not only not listen and consult any other experts in the field and any other opinions and views, but those voices will be aggressively silenced and censored And not only, but they will be ridiculed and slandered. So the experts will be listened to for their new variant alarm. ICL came up with another computer simulation showing some scary predictions about the B117 quote global lineage variant. ICL said the subvariant of B117 was up to 70% more transmissible. They were wrong again, or as usual. But the new and emerging respiratory virus threats advisory group, NERVTAG, used ICL's quote-unquote silence to provide some legitimacy to the government's claim that the COVID-19 pandemic was still raging. ICL and NERVTAG designated N501Y as a variant of concern. Amid all the panic, few seemed to notice that there wasn't any evidence that these scary variants presented any additional risk. Writing about the newly discovered British variant in December, physicians from Johns Hopkins Medical Center explained why there was no reason to panic. Mutations in viruses are neither new or unexpected. This particular strain was detected in southeastern England in September 2020. In December, it became the most common version of the coronavirus, accounting for about 60% of new COVID cases. We are not seeing any indication that the new strain is more virulent or dangerous in terms of causing more severe COVID-19 disease. Professor Michael Yeadon also observed that the notion of a greater risk from variants of SARS-CoV-2 took no account of existing human immunity. Even if a variant spread more readily, it could only do so among an ever-dwindling number of potential hosts. Moreover, the SARS-CoV-2 genome is vast in comparison to the tiny genetic variations that are allegedly so lethal. A recent study of T-cell immunity by Californian scientists demonstrated how the human immune system is able to adapt to the new SARS-CoV-2 variants. The scientists found that by attacking the virus from many angles, the body has the tools to potentially recognize different SARS-CoV-2 variants. So in other words, these guys are pumping out fear, hysteria, and propaganda, no doubt for the purposes of keeping this lockdown going and keeping the tyranny going, and ignoring the fact that, you know, your body has the answer to this great threat, and that this is no such threat at all. Much like the coronavirus is no threat to 99% of the population, but alas, we've completely changed society as we know it and continue to do so and continue to perpetrate the much greater crisis in terms of societal mental health, the economy, jobs, you name it. There are real crises out there being caused by the government's reaction to an apparent crisis. Even if 100,000 people had died, say there was no manipulation of the figures of coronavirus. Sorry, that's not a reason to do what they've done. I'm sorry, 250,000 is not a reason to do what they've done. I don't know, even maybe 1 million in a population over here of 67 million. Bad as that is, what they are doing is incredibly destructive, and the dominoes haven't fallen yet. We can all look forward to it. But 100,000... nothing in that number justifies the absolute, there's no word hyperbole sufficient for it, really. This is a complete and utter disaster, what they've done. And no one seems to realize it. It's just like everyone's walking around in this fog of insanity and ignorance. The amount of economic ignorance is just off the chart. And the amount of cowardice is off the charts. So many people just going along with this. I mean, I had this out with my church, and the reason that I was angry is because I realized these guys are cowards. They don't stand for anything. They're fair weather Christians, and when the crisis came, and when it came to take a stand or even have the discernment and some sort of knowledge, they were devoid of any of it. So the human immune system normally defends itself against the whole virus, not just one specific genetic component. It does this by breaking the complete virus down into its constituent nucleotide sequences, Prepared to resist each and every one of these genetic signals, it won't be fooled by any minor genetic mutation in one spike protein, Professor Yeadon stated. What is happening in the name of saving lives simply doesn't stand up to scientific scrutiny. It is difficult to understand how the experts at ICL couldn't work this out for themselves. The ICL team were led by Professor Eric Voltz, just as they did after releasing their wildly inaccurate COVID-19 models in the spring. They immediately started backpedaling on their claims that the new variant was up to 70% more transmissible. They also claimed that it was more deadly, too, and they had to backtrack on that because they did an ad in the advertising standards organization over here. I had to challenge them on it, and they had to retract it. The claim of 70% increased transmission came from a comparison made between models for N51Y and A222V. Speaking to the COVID-19 Genomics UK consortium about how these models work, Volt said, "The model fit is not particularly good. There are lots of outliers early on, and there are lots of outliers quite late. We wouldn't expect that a logistical growth model is necessarily appropriate in this case." Volt and the ICL team then used a model that was, quote, "not particularly good" to make the comparison anyway. Yeah, and it'll be all over the news, you know. It's to say they always get it done first, these people, you know. It's just like, let's get the fear out there. Once it's out there, we can sort of backtrack on it a little bit, or, you know, if anybody challenges on it. And, you know, this article that I'm reading is not going to be, you know, broken down on Sky News. There isn't going to be, you know, discussion on this in the coming weeks on mainstream media, you know. But the initial hysteria and fear-mongering certainly hits the mainstream media. But this not particularly good model, anyway, to make the comparison anyway, adding that their simulations had to work with very noisy sampling, in quotes. Voltz pointed out the data was limited and the inappropriate data sets were incomplete. He said it was too early to tell with any accuracy what the impact of N51Y might be. None of this, of course, prevented the UK Prime Minister from using ICL's not particularly good science to allege the new variants were up to 70% more transmissible. Of course not. A media feeding frenzy ensued, with an ever-growing list of variants being flung around. Perhaps emboldened by this, Johnson then said the new variants were 30% more deadly too. Even the mainstream media reported the scientific objections to that one. NervTag stepped in to defend the Prime Minister. While NervTag Chair Professor Peter Horby acknowledged there was no data to back up Mr. Johnson's claim and that the risk of him being right was very, very small, in quote, he offered a weird defense on Boris's behalf. Horby hypothesized that if the government hadn't made a baseless claim, which later, by some miraculous chance, turned out to be true, they could be accused of a cover-up. Notwithstanding this unfathomable argument, at the most basic epidemiological level, the new variant narrative was wrong. The statistics prove it. They also show that the sharp increase in mortality, which correlates precisely with the COVID-19 vaccine, rollout, cannot easily be explained by blaming new variants. So the implications there, and the what's left hanging there after that statement, is that you have a sharp increase in mortality after the vaccine rollout. But as this article has extensively prefaced, it couldn't possibly be as a result of these new variants, which are no more deadly. So begs the question then, and I think this is what the article is all about. You can see a spike in deaths after the vaccines have been rolled out in these care homes and stuff like that. Correlation does not prove causation, but it is reason for investigation. So perhaps we can anticipate a report from the UK Medicines and Healthcare Products Regulatory Agency in the coming days and weeks. The MHRA were certainly anticipating the significant numbers of adverse drug reactions from the COVID-19 vaccines. They tendered for an all software solution to meet the projected need. The MHRA stated, "The MHRA urgently seeks an artificial intelligence software tool to process the expected high volume of COVID-19 vaccine adverse drug reaction. It is not possible to retrofit the MHRA's legacy systems to handle the volume of ADRs that will be generated by a COVID-19 vaccine. A 1.5 million contract was awarded to Genpact UK to augment the MHRA's yellow card vaccine ADR monitoring system. The contract was signed in early November 2020, providing Genpact UK the opportunity to upgrade the yellow card software in time for phase one rollout of the COVID-19 vaccines. The MHRA report, the ADR notifications they received through the Interactive Drug Analysis Profiles, the IDAP system. To date, and for some unknown reason, there are no available IDAP reports for any of the COVID-19 vaccines. Oh, isn't that interesting? Isn't that convenient? The MHRA state, information regarding suspect adverse reactions to vaccines is not currently available via the IDAPS, but is available on request. Yeah, I'm sure it is. I'm sure you would do. You'd probably spend the day on the phone getting bounced around and hung up on and all sorts of shenanigans. Okay, these guys, of course, went ahead and tried it. Despite numerous requests for this data, the MHRA have yet to release any information. Given the apparent correlation between increased mortality and the vaccine rollout, this is inexplicable. Clearly, the MHRA were anticipating a possible correlation. They invested in bespoke software to deal with the eventuality. The MHRA informed the Financial Times that the COVID-19 vaccines had undergone rigorous testing. This was a disingenuous statement. None of the COVID-19 vaccines are close to completing any clinical trials. They are not. Basically, the clinical trials are happening in the care homes, if you ask me. They are not licensed by the MHRA and do not have marketing authorization. They have been distributed in the UK thanks to legislative changes to Regulation 174 of the Human Medicine Regulations 2012. These changes included the removal of all liability from manufacturers and distributors. Wow. Nobody's accountable. Nobody's liable, you know. This came as a great relief to pharmaceutical corporation executives, as Gary Nabel, Chief Scientific Officer at Sanof. I mean, that's a scandal that there should be no accountability there. I mean, these guys can make all the money from these vaccines being rolled out, and there's not even proof of safety. You know, I don't think that we should have to, you know, go through all these extra rigorous testings because to find out if a vaccine's efficacy rate that can be established between a patient and a doctor. You can try these things out in any sort of free society, but it must be safe. And for these guys to be able to put a vaccine out and there's no liability and no accountability and it's legislated by the government is an absolute scandal. Do people even realize that when they're taking this? By the way, if your mother or your grandmother or your brother dies taking this vaccine, no one's liable. This came as a great relief, as I said, to pharmaceutical corporation executives because they can make all the money they want with no liability. As Gary Nabel, Chief Scientific Officer at Sanofi, highlighted, you're talking about vaccines that have potential liabilities. It's an unknown. As big as a 30,000 person trial is, when these go out into the world of millions of people, things will happen. Mr. Nabel fondly recalled the wise words of the famous vaccine developer Morris Hillman. Every time I launch a new vaccine, I hold my breath for the first 30 million doses. And this thing has been, what, tested on 30,000? On the 8th of December, Margaret Keenan became the first woman in the world to receive a COVID vaccine. The UK government stated that it would take a few days to get phase one of the vaccine roll-up and running nationally. They started publishing data on numbers of vaccinated people from the 11th of January 2021. The BBC reported that all care homes in England had been offered a vaccine by the end of January. This was in keeping with a report on the 27th of January from the National Care Forum that 95% of English care homes had received the vaccine. BBC Scotland reported that well over half of the care homes in Scotland had been vaccinated by the 7th of January. A completed care home vaccine program in Scotland also seems highly likely. Anyway, this is a long article, but I mean, it's getting to the part where I want to actually discuss it, but you can find out what the rest of this article, because we're running out of time here. But you can find this article on UK Column, and they have a website. You can just type it in and you can get this article on just UK Column. And also they have a YouTube channel, and it's excellent. I mean, it really is. It's as good as you'll get. All right, folks. I'll be back next Wednesday, same time, midday, Central Time. I'll also be on live with Richard Carey on Beyond the Official Narrative on Republic Broadcasting Network on Monday at midday Central Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Until then, folks, have a great week and stay safe.